And we are off and running.
That
Better
is
late than
awesome.
never, huh?
Yeah, no, it's great. And welcome, folks, to the April Mike and Scotty show. Mike is doing this from his recuperative bed.
Yeah,
He,
really.
yeah, you are sick as a dog. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Well, I don't get sick that often, but when I do, I do it up.
Yeah, and we can trace this back a few years. I remember it probably seems like it was only a few years ago, but it was actually probably close to 8 or 9 years ago that literally you spent a month sleeping in a reclining chair.
That was that Florida plague I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
No. But this and this wasn't the flu per se, it was more of just a cold, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean it's some kind of bug, and it certainly behaved as the Uber cold at the very least. And I have a touch of asthma, and that doesn't help anything either. So, but it usually takes me about twice as long to get rid of a cold as it does the average person.
Yep.
Karen, I was generous enough to give it to Karen when I was done with it. So,
That's nice of you. Yeah, I'm sure she appreciated that.
she was not a happy camper about it, but she had a far better attitude about it than I did. And
Well, she's a better person.
just in general, we know that. So she is zooming along with it at about twice the rate, and was out there gardening today, and I just marveled at it.
It's amazing what one really warm day will do. I mentioned to you earlier that the landscapers have been out in full force today in my neighborhood, but also I noticed the buds on the flowering crab tree in my front lawn are popping out as well.
Well, we've got stuff all over the place here coming up. We've got daffodils coming up, and other kind of plants that my wife could identify, but I can't. But they're coming up all over the place here.
Well, and you're probably about a week ahead of us just
Yeah, I think
because
we
of
must be in a
your.
different climate growing zone here. I know Sucanfilone is up there, so it wouldn't surprise me if you were in between one there.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I'm glad you're feeling better. We apologize, folks. We are a little late this month in terms of getting this podcast out, and
It is all
it.
my fault.
I was just going to say, I think we've started off with a pretty good track record. So, the fact that we're a week or so behind here, hopefully we can be forgiven. But with that in mind, we do have a bunch of things that we want to clear off our plates. And I guess first and foremost, maybe you can talk a little bit about what, if anything, you were able to accomplish while you weren't feeling well.
I had about I guess I had about three days where I was just, I was literally just sitting in the recliner watching Mike Bednar videos that I had purchased but not had time to watch. And these are put out by John Patchoulas Media, I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know if you've heard of it, but
I haven't, no.
these are videos that Mike Bednar's dad shot. And they're just incredible. They're shot on my line that I modeled, the Lehigh Valley, and then the Lehigh line in Conrail days. And he covered the whole, basically, they're just doing these iterations going forward in time. So the ones I just got in were the early Conrail years. And boy, you want to see some incredible stuff, like a single SW8 pulling 100 stored gondolas back to Allentown, things like
Much.
that. Pups in the Hazelton coal fields, and all kinds of incredible things on the Lehigh line, plus some rail fanning trips that they took to the main line, the middle division. So I incredible stuff. And you can imagine my surprise at, for example, how many SD45s were running at that time. The middle division was, it seemed like there were more SD45s than anything else.
Interesting.
So they seemed to run later than I had in mind, and actually that makes me think of something that I hadn't told you we were going to talk about, but I'm going to segue right into it.
You should go.
I'm gearing up here. You can tell I'm gaining momentum.
Yeah.
So eras, part of the way that you judge what should be appropriate for your era is to have an accurate roster for that particular time period, which sounds like a great idea, but it's not always so easy to come by. And I had put together some roster information for 1985, and I also had been able to put together 1982, but I really didn't have anything in between. So it was part of my decision to model 1985 because I had the information to
Sure,
accurately
sure.
model it, and I could see that certain models of locomotives that I wanted to include were running during that time, like SD50s and SD45s. Nice combination there. And all was good with that. Plus, it also dovetailed with when the Mehoopany plant was still shipping out by rail. So that was definitely the latest, that I wanted to go. But just on a whim, I kind of posted a lament about the lack of this roster information on one of the Facebook groups, and a fellow got back to me and said he was with the Conrail Historical Society, and that they had all this material, but it wasn't really all put together yet.
I gotta interrupt you for a second
Okay.
because I still laugh at the terms Penn Central Historical Society and Conrail Historical Society because all it means is that you and I are getting really old.
Think of how long Conrail has been gone.
Right.
1998.
Yep.
That's a long time.
It is a long time.
And I guess my anecdote about getting old is I was telling somebody the other day that I went for, as luck would have it, I happened to have to go for my annual physical while I was in the throes of all of this, right? So,
Ugh.
you go for the physical, and if your experience is like mine, they have a an online portal where you can log on and download the information about your blood tests and the results of the physical and all that. And I usually do that just to make sure they got it right. So I log on to the website and log in properly, and I call up my report, and the first thing I see is 60-year-old man. And I think, who the hell is that? And then I realize, oh my God, that's me they're talking about. So anyway, get back to the fun stuff. So
Sorry, sorry.
this fellow was kind enough to travel to the repository wherever they keep this historical information. And he had told me that Larry DeYoung, who used to work for Conrail, and I know Larry and I've met him, he's a wonderful guy. And he works for the Western New York and Pennsylvania now in his retirement. They just couldn't keep him down, I guess. He's got railroading in his blood. But he had donated a lot of his Conrail materials to the Historical Society, and the guy sent me one page right out of a Conrail book of some kind that had the entire Conrail roster information for 1984. Just
Jeez.
unbelievable. And he says they also have 83. He's just got to find it and get a picture of it. So, needless to say, anybody who's interested in that, I'm happy to share it because that's what it's for. And I was able to use some of the information to cross-check some of what I put together from various books and magazines, like Old Rails Northeast and Withers Books and things like that. That's where my information had previously come from. But boy, you can't beat just getting it. There's no doubting the veracity of this information. It's right there on Conrail stationery. You know what I mean? I mean, there it is.
Yep, that's fantastic that it exists. And there's probably other than probably for modelers, there might not be a real great reason for it to exist. But it's nice that you've got it as a resource and you can make the most of it. I know that when I was and this is certainly a case of apples to oranges, but when I was researching the Rutland. All that information still exists too, but of course we're talking about a substantially lesser number of pieces of equipment. Literally, you could pretty much go through and count them without need of maybe even writing down the numbers you were counting to so that
Sure,
you'd remember.
sure.
So, yeah, I would certainly be interested in seeing that list. Maybe that's something. Well, I don't know how they'd feel about us publishing that on the Facebook page, but.
I don't think they'd mind. I really don't. I mean, the info, like I said, is there to be disseminated. It's just that because it's all in basically hard copy form, it's a daunting task to organize it and categorize it and get it on some kind of a website. So he said, he was basically using me as a guinea pig to see how that would work. So
Yep.
there'll probably be more info about that moving forward. But I guess the short story is that I was able to use that extra sick time, to just kind of watch some videos that I hadn't had a chance to watch. And it was actually a very pleasant thing. And then it kind of got the modeling juices going. So even though I really wasn't in any shape to get back out with any of my IT related customers, there's no way I'm going to be out there, infecting everybody. A lot of them are medical facilities and things like that. So they wouldn't have wanted to see me coming. So
Probably not.
I used the time to do some non-difficult things on the layout. I did a lot of scenery work. I finished up that whole creek scene that we were talking about, the
Yes.
New England brownstone abutments last month, and I put a
Yep.
couple pictures of that on the Facebook page.
So I'd interrupt you again to say that first of all, folks, go, if you haven't seen them, go take a look. If you're not on our Facebook page, sign up and then go take a look. The pictures are wonderful. The scene came out fantastic. The abutments look great. And what I want to know, Mike, is can you give us a full explanation of how you fixed the issue with the water in
Oh,
that
great,
area?
great, great point. I'm glad you remembered that because I wanted to exonerate you fully on that. Just by way of background, when I needed to pour the Susquehanna River that goes around on my entire peninsula where Mehoopany is, Scott was kind enough to offer to come down and help me because it is not a trivial thing to do a giant pour like that. It really is a minimum two-man job, and it's a lot of mixing. Just in doing the mixing that I did on this last stream, I thought, boy, I guess that's why you're a baseball pitcher, because you must have a pretty good arm there. Because by the time you finish mixing all of that stuff for that length of time, it's not a trivial thing. And I don't know how many mixes you did, but it had to be at least 20.
Yeah, I was trying to remember exactly how much epoxy we used.
Well, it was multiple kits. Didn't we run back and forth to AC Moore twice?
Yeah, it was. I know it was a couple of hundred dollars worth of
Right,
material,
right.
and somewhere along the line. I just didn't mix it enough, or the ratio was just off a little bit. I don't know.
I think on one of your mixes, the ratio was just a little bit off, and it's one of those things where if it's a little bit off, it might as well be completely off because it's either right or it's not.
Yeah.
And so because of that, and it was an area that was right like at the end of the peninsula, the mix didn't set up properly. And I put out a lot of feelers as to what might be able to be done about it, and somebody said use a heat gun, which might make it kick. And
Oh.
I did, and I was actually able to get a little bit more of a gel to it, to the point where it was no longer soft, it was just a little sticky.
Yeah.
So what happened is over time, and particularly at the during the course of this whole last layout kaboom, the dust all just stuck to it, and it looked really bad. So I kept looking at it, thinking there's got to be some solution to this, and it was sort of on my mind because I was getting ready to pour the next creek, and it provided really good incentive to err on the side of caution in terms of getting it right. So I mean, I did. So when I did the mixing for those two creeks that I just did, I did the multiple cup method. I measured it. I measured out everything in multiple cups, color coded them with a Sharpie so I wouldn't get them screwed up. Mixed them into a third cup for 2 minutes, and I had a big clock on my laptop that I was using to guide me, and then poured that into yet another cup and a new stirrer, and mixed that for an additional minute. And I found when I do that extreme mixing method, which is really what they recommend, it just comes out fine.
Yep.
And it really helps to have everything pre-measured in individual cups. So in other words, each pair of cups is a third full, so that when I pour them into an empty cup, it's two-thirds full, so I have room to mix. So it's a whole bunch of cups when you're doing these streams. And that was a fraction of what we did when we did that giant river pour. So, I'm in no way complaining about the effort there, because there's the potential for getting it wrong is greater than the potential for getting it right, And it was just one small error there. So anyway, I kept looking at, I poured my rivers and my creeks rather, and they came out good, and it got me thinking about that spot there. And while at the same time that I was doing these creeks, I also needed to finish the striping on the end of the road there. I had done most of it, but the area around the intersection and the grade crossing and where I needed to do railroad crossing markings on the road and all that hadn't been done yet. So rather than go through 58 cans of gloss coat, I found some clear brush-on Minwax acrylic, and that's what I had been using to put down on the what do you call it stuff, the lightweight spackle, in order to have a nice glossy finish to apply the decals to, and then I would dull coat over that, and that worked really well, and it had the advantage of non being being a non-aerosol. I didn't have to worry about getting any dust from the surroundings, from the ground cover or anything onto the getting stuck in the clear gloss, right? So as I'm brushing this stuff on, I just thought, I wonder, because I was thinking in terms of that spot, maybe I'd try some future, floor wax on it, or just trying something over it, that wasn't a thick coating. But I had this acrylic and I thought, what have I got to lose? It looks like garbage now. I might as well try it, right? So I went over to the spot, and I took some alcohol and a clean rag, and cleaned off as much of the dirt as I could. And the dirt largely came off, so that was a good thing. And what I was left with was something that looked kind of, filmy and streaky, and kind of the way it looked before it got all dirty, right? So I thought, let's go for it. So I brushed this stuff on, and it looks like, it's almost like skim milk. You know what I mean? It's a whitish stuff as it's going on. And I brushed it on all over that entire area, and just and walked away, and came back like an hour later, and I couldn't believe it. It was just fine. It was like it didn't happen. I showed it to Dave Monday night when he came over, and he couldn't believe it either. It just completely fixed it.
That's I don't know of any situation where there has been uncured resin that has been fixed other than to cut it out and redo it.
Yeah, which in the case of this, how long do you think that river is? It's got to be almost 20 feet.
Was going to say 20 feet.
Yeah. I mean, it goes around the entire perimeter, so there's no place to make a cut,
No, there really isn't. And
and taking it all out is just, that wasn't going to happen.
no, absolutely no. No, we were, it, and that's what I felt worst about was that there was no fix for it that I could suggest.
Well, no good deed goes unpunished, but you can put your guilt feelings aside now, all is well.
Well, more importantly, and I mean, certainly I'm happy that I'm off the hook here, but But more importantly, I'm glad that you're happy with it, and I'm glad that that you found a solution, because I think a lot of people are going to benefit from that.
Yeah, I wish I had taken a before picture, and I might have it someplace, you know,
Yep.
because the fix is so profound, it almost seems inconceivable.
I've poured many, 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 many water features, and Envirotex has always been the preferred product. I mean,
Sure.
sometimes I use a gloss gel medium over it, but I would say probably better than 90% of the time, that's the product of choice. And I've always been careful, and I've never had a problem. And of course, the one time that I do, it's in a massive application, on a friend's layout. So,
Classic worst case scenario. I get that, but you know, it is not a difficult thing to use, but it's absolutely unforgiving. In other words, if it's not right, it's really wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, folks, Mike posted some pictures on the Facebook Mike and Scotty live page. So go check them out. And so what else? I'm guessing you watched quite a bit of TV while you were convalescing as well.
Yeah, other than the videos. Well, what I was going to say though, now that I think about it, is the other thing I did was catch up on the Dartmouth Locomotive Works installs, because
Oh yeah.
you know, even when you're sick, they just keep coming. You know, it's like the mail, you know, it just keeps coming. So, a little Seinfeld reference there. So, a lot of these installs, I think, you know, benefited greatly from I tend to do them in clumps, because you sort of get in gear and you do these things all at once. And maybe that's how I
Sure.
work in general. I guess just talking about it, that kind of describes a lot of my methodology, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, you certainly get momentum behind you. I don't think I've ever recalled you telling me in all the years I've known you that, oh yeah, I started a project Monday night and I finished it Monday night. So
My
yeah, you,
projects tend to be large.
yes, they do. Yes, they do. But you had mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, and of course we're talking about the installation of DCC decoders,
Right.
that you kind of had cleared the backlog, and you no sooner had cleared the backlog when there was a new backlog. And so where do you stand now?
The interesting thing that I'm seeing is that as you probably know, the Loc sound decoders are getting into the majority of the OEM manufacturers now, right? So more and more people are getting exposed to them, and when they get them, they're finding that they want their outdated decoders to be brought up to the same, you know, in the rest of their fleet, to the same standard. So it's created like this mini boom of people that are sending in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 units at a time, and a lot of them are also repeat customers, people who have gotten the first batch in and are sold on it. So now they want everything to be like that. You know what I mean? So it's made for a very nice little steady stream of things coming in, which is great as long as there are things going out. But you know, when you're down for whatever reason, they just pile up. So the good news is I got my mind right and got down there and just kind of, you know, walked through them. And actually, it was a good thing to do when I wasn't 100%, because it's not a very physical thing to do. You know, you can just kind of sit there and work on them at your leisure. So it was a good way to get some things accomplished without having to feel like, you know, the sands of your life are going through the hourglass, you know.
Like you're stuck in the back room.
Right. The other
Nice.
thing that I did, and I don't know if I mentioned this, but I think last time we were talking about the wiring of Pittston Yard and all of that. So all of that got done, and I've been test running on the layout, and I'm basically getting ready to do a, you know, a very low impact, very small, like 3 or 4 people op session, just to see how the layout performs with more than myself and Dave running trains, you know.
Sure.
And in doing so, I've been running cleaning trains and then just making up some trains that I might actually want to run and running those. And forgive me if I've already spoken about this, but I've been amazed at how different the layout is to run now, because it's a much longer run. It used to take about 12 minutes to complete an entire nonstop run over the entire layout, and now it's 20, which is a significant difference in terms of the perception of going someplace. You really feel like, you went somewhere because it
Sure.
takes a while.
Yep.
And
Yep.
the other thing I'm finding is without that cross-aisle bridge that we had, from the peninsula at Skinner's Eddy over to the other side there, without that being in place, and with your train popping out at Towanda instead of having to come out, from behind the scenes all the way down at the end of Towanda,
Yep.
you're following your train now for a significant period of time. So it comes out on the extreme left-hand side of Towanda. You're with your train all the way down that side of the basement, and then you're with your train all the way up the peninsula through Lacyville. And there's no tunnel at the end of that now to break up that experience. So you're following your train all the way around that end and through Skinner's Eddy and all the way down in the distance heading off towards Meshopin. And I mean, you're just with your train the whole time. So there are all these views that you didn't have before. And it's just a very different experience now to run a train there, So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the operators react to that and interact with their trains differently. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
You know, it's interesting, and I think the lesson here for listeners is that, when you design your layout initially, you put a lot of thought into it. You try to fill and fit the space as best you can. You work around the impediments, and by the time you start whacking together benchwork, you think you've got it nailed. That was 30 years ago for you.
Just about.
And it's
And I had
you've
never built
got
a large layout before.
well no and so you started off with one thing that's now occupying the same space, but it's completely different,
Right.
and it's completely different for the better.
Well, it's basically I'd like to think of it as capitalizing on new information, lessons learned, right? So if you're able to think about it in that way, then you think less about the man hours that are down the tube and all of that. I think of it as that was fun that I had. I enjoyed building what I did. And I try not to think about the cost of what went into the dumpster because, a lot of it got reused. So it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I didn't go in there with a bulldozer and hack things out. I talk about this in my May Getting Real column in Model Railroad Hobbyist, the whole concept of layout kaboom and how to, because somebody did, on one of the groups just posted that he's bored with his layout or he's tired with his layout, but he doesn't want to rip it out and start over again. And the next series of articles that I'll be doing for Model Railroad Hobbyist will be talking about this process in some detail. And how you might think about it, how you might plan it for a good outcome, and just basically technique oriented lessons learned from this whole experience, And when you think about it, this latest remodel was about a year. It wasn't a bad year, but it was definitely a year that had a beginning, middle, and end, and I'm ready to, move on from there now. I shouldn't need to wholesale tear anything out anymore.
Gotcha.
So
Gotcha.
that's a positive thing. There's layout to build. There's buildings and there's detailing and kitbashing of locomotives and freight cars and scenic details, gobs of fun stuff to do.
Now, I know I can't take credit for it because many other people had said the same thing to you, but I think my comment when I first saw your layout many years ago was, do you really need that pool table in the room there? And it seems to me that the day you kind of grasped the concept of getting rid of the pool table was really when all this started.
That's actually a pretty good observation. In other words, prior to that, I probably wouldn't have considered wholesale tearing anything out. But once you get into that mode, and particularly when you see what comes out of it, I know that I'm much happier with the layout I have now than the layout I had before. So, a lot of the things that I've changed have been with an eye towards improving my own personal satisfaction of the layout, And that's also based on not only lessons learned, in my own obsessions, but also operating on other layouts. Every single time I operate here or anywhere else, I learn something.
So now, just to strike the age chord one more time,
Huh.
that was about 10 years ago.
Was it really?
Yep, because that was right about the time frame that we did your weathering DVD, and that was 2007.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, you know what they say, time flies when you're having fun.
Or as my uncle would say, time's fun when you're having flies. So, so speaking of time, it's that time of year, Mike, where today, and today's a perfect example. It was 82 here, and it probably still is. I've got all the windows open and the ceiling fans on, and it's just beautiful, and it just makes me want to get outside and do some rail fanning. And locally, we've talked a lot about the Grafton and Upton, and you and I have talked about a field trip. And maybe now that you're on the mend, we can actually make that happen.
You mean now that I'm not infectious?
Well, but it's not just you. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, I went on an appointment to a client in Boston today, and she had been out all last week with the flu. She was about the last person on the planet I wanted to
I'll
see,
bet.
but it had to be done. And there was a lot of hand sanitizer in use when I walked out of there because, I don't want to get. I certainly don't want to get it. I am going on a family vacation to Santa Fe, New Mexico, next week.
Plus, you have to pitch pretty soon, don't you?
Well, that is, and I'll tell you that process for getting ready to pitch, I think, is one of the things that helps me stay healthy because it's a fairly for a 54-year-old, it's a fairly strenuous workout regimen. And I mean, I am working out every morning before work, and then sometimes after work as well. Includes a trip to the gym, and then there's the ever-present practices. But our season opens on April 30th. We will be defending yet another Rhode Island, Massachusetts state championship, and so I'm looking forward to it, but I've been throwing off a mound indoors for the past 6 or 7 weeks, and I'm pleased to report that my shoulder feels good, and I'll be ready to go when the bunting is hung.
Yeah, hopefully you won't be in tears by the end of the season here.
No, and last year was a little bit of a different situation for me. I had some health issues at the beginning of the season that really kept me from working out to the degree that I know I need to, so that I don't kind of get into that situation. And it set me back. It really kind of hit me hard, my lack of conditioning about 2/3 of the way through the season. But I had to stop everything and kind of look at it from a preseason regimen again so that I was ready to go for the playoffs. And I guess the point is that the average age of the person listening to this podcast is probably right around ours.
You think so?
Yeah.
I have to confess, I don't have the slightest idea about the demographics, but You know, if you folks are on the Facebook group and you feel like sharing that information, I would find that interesting to know, what our different ages are here.
Yeah, the demographics would be interesting, but I guess what I want to say is that from my perspective, the older you get, the harder it is to get in shape and stay in shape, but the worst thing you can do is get out of shape.
Oh, that's a fact. And during my 2 week layoff here, I could just feel myself deteriorating. And it was really only when I got back out doing my daily walks and things like that that I actually started to genuinely feel better.
Yep. So, I'm gonna do some local rail fanning, and I'm looking forward to heading down to Santa Fe next week and taking some pictures of some locomotives that I can post on the site.
That should be a great time.
So yeah, and on top of that, we're gonna do some whitewater rafting on the Rio Grande. We're gonna go to Los Alamos. And
Wow.
yeah, so it should be fun, but perhaps you and I need to look at the calendar and see when you can come up and
Yeah, if we don't put something on the calendar, it won't
well,
happen.
that's
So
right.
you know,
And
let's after the show, we'll see if we can pick a date for that.
again, folks, if you don't know Mike by now, you don't know that pretty much his life is scheduled, and that's a great way sometimes to get to be productive and to be successful. And Mike's work life, Mike's model railroading is certainly a great example of that. So
Yeah, I don't want to give the impression that I'm rigid because boy, life happens while you're making plans. You've got to be flexible. But by the same token, I hate to waste time. It's the one thing that is like the most precious commodity. So I find that by planning things as much as possible, I can try to be as efficient as I like to be.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. It works for you. Anything else here before we wrap this sucker up?
I just wanted to give a shout out to my friend Jim Dufour. I had posted a video on the podcast group page, and one of the reasons I posted it, Jim's got a beautiful layout, and he's doing like an open housey kind of op session this coming weekend that I will be unable to attend for obvious reasons, but I think he'll appreciate that. No sense going up there and infecting everybody I know, but one of the things that I liked about that video that a friend of his took was one particular view that I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but you should watch it
I
if you
did. I've
haven't.
seen it. Yeah.
I really liked the end platform going away portion of the video.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was very effective, and it provided a view that you don't normally get to see, and his layout is such a nice looking layout that I thought that it allowed me to see some things on it that I hadn't noticed before, and I've been there a whole bunch of times. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you should.
So a couple of things about Jim Dufour and his layout and that particular piece of information that he put out. Jim is just an absolutely fantastic modeler. He models the Boston and Maine Cheshire Branch, which is obviously the Boston and Maine is a fallen flag, but this particular line is it has been abandoned for many, many years. But it's a very, very unique part of the Boston and Maine. It was a branch line, but it ran quite a bit of traffic between North Walpole, New Hampshire, and Keene, New Hampshire, and very heavily, as you would expect in New Hampshire, very heavily wooded area that ran adjacent to the Connecticut River. And Mike, it doesn't matter to me whether you're modeling the Cheshire Branch or the Santa Fe Main Line or the New York Central Main Line. They all have a unique look to them.
That's right. And he was able to capture that look really well. It's a very faithful
Oh.
reproduction. It's pure prototype modeling, my favorite kind. And
And to me, there are certain common aspects to the hobby. But to me, where the artistry comes in is being able to capture the feel for the area that you're modeling, something that you've done very effectively. Something that Jim has done very effectively. Mike Confalone has been phenomenal with it. Dick Elwell is, you know, is probably, you know, the godfather of being able to create an effective scene that represents the area that you're modeling. And even though, you know, it's a little more fanciful than realistic, you certainly get a sense of George Celios and what he's trying to model and the era and the locale. And to me, those are the things that really establish you as an artist in this hobby.
I think that, just to close the circle there, I think that's what my earlier layout efforts were lacking. It was so freelanced that it was just like everything and nothing all at once. And the minute I started to focus in on a particular prototype and try to capture the feel and flavor of that area, that's what grounded it. That's what enabled me to sort of connect with it just myself and be happier with the modeling efforts.
So the word I like to use is continuity.
Okay.
Right? When we're modeling the prototype and we're really trying to tie it all together, it gives us scene continuity. When you're, you know, just kind of flinging it, you know, you don't really have that continuity. And but your efforts say, you know, you could be a great modeler. But I think your end result kind of shows that. So again, if you're on the Facebook site, take a look at the videos that were posted by Mike from Jim's layout, and I think you'll see what we're talking about.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how folks like my audio this month.
Well, that's always an ongoing thing, so we'll see. And folks, please, as always, and we know you will, give us your feedback.
Keep those cards and letters coming.
All right, folks, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next month.
See you then.